You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Turning now to the subject of welfare benefits, or more specifically, the loss of cash assistance to thousands of families in Michigan. The number of Michigan families getting cash assistance benefits from the state plummeted to the lowest level in more than 40 years, just 9 months after reforms were implemented. 12 months in, the state is spending nearly $18 million a month less on cash assistance, the cumulative result of reform and an improving economy. More than 9,000 Michigan families were cut from cash assistance last fall, a number that grew close to 15,000 as months passed. No other state has removed so many families from welfare in such a short amount of time with so little notice. We wondered about the impact on those thousands of families who lost benefits or ones who are getting cash assistance temporarily pending the outcome of a complex legal battle. Lester Graham with Michigan Watch has been following the story for Michigan Radio, as has Ron French, a writer for Bridge Magazine. Welcome to both of you. Ron, let's start with you. Recap for us just what happened with these welfare benefits.
Last fall, the legislature chose to reform welfare in a way that put time limits on welfare recipients. Now, there had always been time limits, but they started actually enforcing them. And the legislature wanted to enforce a limit of 48 months on welfare recipients, but in an odd sort of circumstance, actually, most of the people then who were kicked off because of federal limits that also began to be enforced. The legislature and the governor wanted to move more people from welfare into the workforce, and they felt the way to do that was to eliminate the cash assistance. And what happened in reality is that the Department of Human Services took it a step further and really kicked off a lot more people than would have been kicked off otherwise.
So suddenly we saw 11,000 people, 11,000 families, I should say, kicked off of cash assistance, which basically meant that they couldn't pay their utilities, they couldn't pay their rent. They still had food aid, and they still had Medicaid, the insurance for the poor, medical insurance for the poor, but they didn't have any way to pay for rent or pay for utilities and things like that.
And how much warning did they get?
Not very much, which was one of the first reasons that the advocates went to court. And they said, look, you need to give these people more time. But this has been a series of court cases over the several months that it's been going on, and it's been quite complicated. Ron's done a fantastic job in Bridge Magazine in keeping up with a lot of these facts. But the more important part is what's happened to these families.
The human toll. And you've both been covering this. Ron, what are you finding has been the impact in terms of numbers of families getting benefits, for starters?
Well, it's been frustrating to report on this because there's so little hard data. The state has not tracked the families who were removed from cash assistance. So we don't have any hard numbers to say among the what is now about 15,000 families who have been removed from cash assistance in the past 12 months, how many of them are employed. How many of them are employed in a way that has replaced the money they would have received from the state? We end up having to look at other things, such as what is the overall unemployment rate, how many families are on food stamps, things like that, and you really don't know if they're the same families or not. What we know anecdotally, and I think Lester has run into the same situation, is Bridge Magazine tried to follow the same families for the full 12 months to see what happened to them as they adjusted. The assumption has always been from the state that there would be a period where families would not have income and they'd search hard and because they would have to put food on the table, they would find jobs and this would, in the end, be a good thing, sort of a tough love approach. The families that we were able to follow, their life situations did not change over the past 12 months. And you can look at that as either positive or negative, depending on how you're looking at it. But the families we spoke to, none of them who did not have jobs, none of them who were unemployed had jobs at the end of 12 months. None of them who had jobs at the beginning of 12 months were working at better jobs at the end of 12 months. Their living situations, a few more people that we spoke to were in worse living situations. Most of the living situations actually had not changed. So from a state's point of view, you can look at that as positively and say, look, the state is saving all this money and families aren't in any worse shape than they were. But from a social services point of view, you can say, wait a minute, the whole concept of this was that by removing these this cash assistance, people were going to get into the workforce, and we have not found evidence that that is happening.
You know, I know there's a fair segment of this of the population who just get so riled up about the idea that my hard-earned tax dollars are going to take going to somebody who's just irresponsible and lazy and living off the public dole. And there are cases of that. We all know that. We've all seen it for ourselves or heard the anecdotal stories. The point that I think everybody misses is, yeah, there might be a single mom who's been irresponsible or a family that's been irresponsible. Mm-hmm. But the kids are paying the price for this as well. There are more kids benefiting from this cash assistance than there are the household leaders, the household caretaker. The kids don't have the choices to make about whether to be responsible or whether not to be responsible. They just know they're hungry.
And
Lester brings up a very important point there. Only families get cash assistance, as generically been called welfare. If I am a single adult, I'm not getting this anyway. So this assistance is really for the benefit of the children. And so, as Lester said, a lot of times it's the children who are struggling because of this.
I would love to get both of you to comment on the statement that State Rep Ken Horn, who had tried to push this through for 4 years and it passed on his fifth try. Ron, you asked him, what will we learn about welfare reform? And here was his answer, quote, people will find their way in life. They'll pick up a hammer or a paintbrush and man up and feed their family. What did you think, Ron, about that answer then and now?
Well, at the time, I felt it was a very accurate representation of what a lot of people think in Michigan, and certainly in a lot of the legislature, that and you saw this in national politics too, where you have the debate over the makers versus the takers. That sense, and I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm saying a lot of people feel that way. That if you actually stop giving people money, then they'll go to work like the rest of us. Well, what Representative Horn did not take into account is that I believe over half of the recipients of cash assistance are either working or in a work training program already. It's just that oftentimes they earn so little money from those jobs, many of them are part-time jobs with no benefits, that they still qualify for cash assistance. And you have to take into account that a lot of these families, if you have been receiving cash assistance for either 4 years or 6 years, depending if you're looking at the federal or state limits, you probably face some work challenges in some way. Either your education is very low. Some of these workers have physical limitations. Some of them are caring for family members who are physically disabled in a way that they have to have someone home all the time. These are families who have some struggles anyway in finding a job. And the state has a worker training program. A lot of people have gone through it. In fact, it's a requirement for almost everyone who gets cash assistance to go through a worker training program. What I would like to see is more people say, well, you know, these people need to man up and grab a hammer. Well, most of them have been in this worker training program. Perhaps we should look more closely at that worker training program if these people have been through it and still are underemployed or unemployed.
The other thing you have to remember is, you know, our unemployment rate, while, you know, decreasing, is still really high. How many people with college degrees do you know who can't find a job or who have a skill set and have a work history and can't find a job? These are going to be the last people any employer is going to give a job because they don't have a history of working sometimes. They don't have the skill set that an experienced worker would. The other thing you have to consider is many of these people are single moms. They've got 2-4 kids. I talked to one person, 23 years old. She had 7 kids. How is she going to get a job, a minimum wage job, and support 7 kids? I mean, it's just it's ludicrous on the face of it. I don't know what the answer is. I don't have a good answer. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the $16 million or $17 million the state is saving in doing this, I think there's going to be a greater cost in the long run because some of these kids are going to end up in foster care. Some of these kids are going to end up in jail. Some of these kids are never going to get the education that they need because they never had a stable home life because they have been moving from house to house. There's a long-term cost to this that this $17 million we might be saving right now, and that savings will increase, but that money we're saving is going to cost us long-term.
If you're just joining us here on Stateside, we're talking with Lester Graham, who is our investigative reporter, Michigan Watch reporter for Michigan Radio News, and Ron French, a writer for Bridge Magazine, talking about the loss of welfare cash assistance to many families in Michigan. Both of you commented on what you're seeing in the terms of tolls, human tolls taken on the families. Talk to us about some of the people that have their stories that have really personally struck you. Lester?
Well, the one woman I talked to that really sticks out in my mind because she had her five-year-old with her, and he kept interrupting the interview saying, Mom, I'm hungry. And, you know, that really got to me. But another person I talked to had a disabled child. You know, she could get welfare cash assistance if she, you know, took care of a disabled child. She was not able to take JET, which is the job training program. So now funding has ended for her. Cash assistance has ended for her. She has no job training. She's had no opportunity to get job training because she had to take care of this disabled kid. It's quite a catch-22, and nobody really expected that the exemptions for taking care of disabled kids would be eliminated as they have been in some cases. Is that right, Ron?
Yes, absolutely. There are about 600 families around the state who had been exempted from worker training because the only able-bodied potential worker in the family had needed to stay at home to care for a disabled child or spouse. These are families who are really stuck. Another woman I spoke to in Detroit who illustrates some of the unintended consequences of reform, this woman was receiving cash assistance and was actually in college, was attempting to get a nursing degree. And when her cash assistance was cut off, she had to drop out of school and find a job. I think she ended up working for a while in a soup factory, and she was then laid off. So here was a situation where basically reform that was supposed to help you man up and find a job took a person from a college setting where they could have actually helped their family eventually and put them back into a situation where they will probably be earning minimum wage all their lives.
I know Governor Snyder noted there are families that have been getting cash assistance for as many as 14 years. And I'd like to get both of your thoughts on, is there merit in reining in how long people can get welfare benefits? How much of that should Michigan taxpayers have to support?
I think you can make a good argument that there needs to be a limit of some kind, that there needs to be some effort made to get people off of welfare. Some of these families that Governor Snyder is mentioning are families who have disabled members at home. If you live in areas of high unemployment, such as Detroit or Flint, the possibility of you staying on cash assistance is higher under the old rules. And so, you know, if you couldn't find a job, where in Detroit, you know, the unemployment rate is much, much higher than the state average.
Correct.
And it makes sense. You could stay on cash assistance for a longer period of time. Is it appropriate for someone to stay on welfare all their lives? No, but we also have families who are on Medicaid all their lives, who are on Social Security all their life because of disabilities. We live in a society where we try to take care of the neediest. And so some of these families, you're always going to have to assist as long as we're not sticking them out in the snow and letting them die.
One of the things the Solicitor General, who is basically the legal counsel for the state and for the DHS in this case, said after the Supreme Court arguments last week is that, this program is called the Temporary Assistance to Needy Families, TANF. It is temporary. It's never was intended to be permanent. And he said the DHS theory is that we should get these people back to work, or if they cannot work, they should get on a more permanent source of aid. Well, other than if you're disabled and you can get SSI through the Social Security Administration, I don't know what kind of permanent aid you can get. It's it's really limiting. And anybody who has had the need to apply for SSI knows that that's at least a two-year process. I don't know what you're going to do with your kids and your family in the meantime. It's a big gap.
I know.
Cynthia, we should point out that to be fair, Michigan is not out of line with all the other states with what their guidelines are today.
Some states are even shorter. I mean, they have a 36-month limit.
Absolutely. So we're on the short end of it, but we are not out of line with what some states are doing. And following up with something Lester said about the amount of money we're saving, I want to make it clear to everyone that the amount that the state is saving, it's between $16 and $18 million a month. So it's a fair amount of savings, but in the state budget, it's a pretty small amount, depending how you look at it. It's just a question of whether the money that you're saving there, the state is going to have to spend in other resources because of things that are happening to these families because they're not getting cash assistance.
As you pointed out, Lester. So I know it's a complicated morass here. Where do we go now?
Well, we're waiting on the Supreme Court right now. They're going to decide this whole question of 48 months versus 60 months. But the real question, I think, is, you know, everybody agrees that there's a problem with welfare, and cash assistance seems to be something that the legislature really believes has been abused. Well, where should the reforms really happen? Just cutting off the families isn't really going to solve a problem because a lot of those people are not going to be able to man up and pick up a hammer or a paintbrush. It's just not going to be – it's going to be beyond their resources, you know, their skills to do something like that. So what do we do? What kind of – why hasn't the job training programs worked better than they have? Is there a problem there? I think there are a lot of questions we need to ask, but I think there are a lot of questions we should have been asking before we decided to say 11,000 families are off. Now, I want to clarify, the 11,000 families are not off right now because of an injunction, but after the Supreme Court rules, that could very well be, and now I think it's up to about 13,000 families, right, Ron?
We're closer to 15,000, and of the 15,000 who were cut off between now, last fall and this fall, about between 6,000 and 7,000 of those are back on pending the court decision. Not everyone was placed back on. Some families applied and their incomes were higher now, and so they couldn't go back on. So about half the families who were kicked off are actually getting a check at this moment waiting on the court decision.
Ron, Lester, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you.
Lester Graham is the Michigan Watch investigative reporter for Michigan Radio News, and Ron French writes for Bridge Magazine. Stateside's executive producer is Zoe Clark. Stateside is engineered by Bob Scon. Our contributors are Ellie Billings, Ellen Cortezoa, Emily Fox, Cameron Stewart, and Mercedes Mejia. This program is a production of Michigan Radio, a broadcasting service of the University of Michigan. I'm Cynthia Canty. Thank you for listening. We'll talk again tomorrow at 3:00.